Good evening, everyone. We had an example this evening of not knowing. To begin with, there were three of us. I have no idea who opened the session. I went and got a bell because no one could ring the bell. And then very quickly there was a fourth person, and then we sat. And then when the next time I looked, there were other people. So, and someone rang the bell. I was looking at my clock to ring the bell, and someone else rang it. The universe provides, as we say. And that kind of fits with what I was thinking about this afternoon, while contemplating, knowing that I would probably give a Dharma talk. Although when we started sitting, I thought I would not give a talk, that we would just do a circle. And I kind of thought, oh, this is nice. It's a small group. We'll just have a circle. But then when I look again, there's more people. So a circle takes a bit of a time. So I'll go back to giving a Dharma talk for tonight. And I was thinking of what someone had thinking of what Alan Watts, I'm quite sure it was him who said this, that when we have an excess of thinking, we lose touch with the real world. But the world just as it is. And in the ex and in the thinking, he includes, concepts, ideas, positions, discomfort, aversions, old habits, stuff like that. And when we have an excess of that, also of thinking, we lose touch with things as they really are. And we have an experience of that when we do the circle, actually, where we have this intention to listen from the heart, to really listen. And therefore, we have a different experience of that group and the speaking than if we were all just sitting around the table chatting over a cup of tea or a glass of wine or something. Or if we were, arguing with people in the subway or with over a dinner table. Family dinners can sometimes become really contentious. We spend a lot of time in those situations talking and thinking. And not so much listening. Because if we actually listen as we have the experience in the circle, the separation dissolves. It's like the circle practice is a practice of dissolving separation by listening from the heart, speaking from the heart, having the intention to not judge ourselves or others, and we see what happens then. We have a different experience of that group, of that moment, of speech, of listening, of heart. So I was thinking of this because today, for some reason, today in particular, but yesterday too, it was kind of bad, that there's a lot of pollen in the air. And I have allergies, and they're pretty intense, although I have acupuncture treatments to prepare for it, and I have remedies that I take, not like hard drugs, but homeopathic stuff. I watch my diet, but still, I can feel it. And I woke up this morning with a bad headache and stuffy, running nose, scratchy eyes. And so, I think it was yesterday, or maybe it was Tuesday as well. I went out into my garden just for like half an hour with a cup of tea in the afternoon. And when I came back in, it was full-blown allergies. So today, it was beautiful sunshine, beautiful day, and I said, I'm not going out there. And I didn't even want to look at the garden. It was like total aversion to the garden outside my door. Almost like repulsed by my garden and feeling resentment for the garden. And I just thought, wait a minute, what is this? So, of course, I'm feeling discomfort. It's not pleasant to have allergy flare-ups like this. And I know that the cause of it, well, the direct cause of it is the pollen. Not so much from the flowers, it's the trees actually. That we have like a kind of tree in our garden that's really allergenic. And so I couldn't even appreciate the beautiful springtime because I was so attached to my what was happening for me, what my aversion to it. And the thing with allergies is if other people have allergies too, you know this, but so the symptoms are caused by like a hypersensitivity. The immune system has a hypersensitivity to something that is typically a harmless substance, right? People who don't have that whose immune system don't have that hypersensitivity, they're not affected by the pollen. Or, people have food allergies or, skin products can give people allergies, all kinds of stuff, all kinds of allergies. Where they're typically harmless substances, but for certain people, there's a hypersensitivity that arises. And the etymology of the word allergy actually is from Greek allos, which means other, different, strange, and then I think it's ergia or something like that, which is the response or the action to that. So it's basically, responding to what is other and rejecting it. The allergy, the re allergic response. So this is like, plays out in our lives all the time, even if we don't say we typically, technically have allergies. But what is foreign, what is strange, what is different, we reject. Or, so what causes me discomfort, I reject. So the garden, I don't even want to look at it. It causes me discomfort. Get away. It's kind of banal to in this situation with me in the garden, but it really speaks to how I can react in other situations and how we all can react in other situations. And if I'm caught up, if I'm holding on to that, my allergic response, and then letting that cloud the way that I see the world, well, I'm not seeing things as they are. I'm not, even my attitude towards my allergy, I can just see it as this, biological thing that's happening, and not, it's neither good nor bad. It's just what it is. Someone else doesn't have that, but it doesn't mean they're better or worse. We learn to take care of ourselves, and people who have food allergies avoid those foods. People who have skin allergies don't use those products. And that the term has even, become taken out of medical and biological context, and it's used kind of in popular language of, I'm allergic to this, I'm allergic to, when I was a kid, even I had this Snoopy sweatshirt, t-shirt, Snoopy the Peanuts character. I think everybody knows this dog. And he was sleeping on his doghouse, and the headline, the slogan was, I'm allergic to morning. So, somebody who doesn't like mornings, doesn't, has a hard time waking up, says, "Oh, I'm allergic to morning," or allergic to certain kinds of music or certain behavior that people have. We could even say, "Well, I'm allergic to Trump." I'm just picking this like obvious example that we could say we're allergic to. And so, in the figurative term way, it takes on this exactly how I was behaving today, of this like antipathy, this repulsion. This it's really, the Greek thing. It's other, it's different, I don't like it. Or it's discomfort, it's uncomfortable for me, so I don't like it, get rid of it. And then we then cut a, I cut myself off from the beautiful spring garden and appreciating the blossoms. This morning we were in the car going somewhere, and there were beautiful cherry, Japanese cherry trees in bloom. Inside the car, I could fully appreciate them because they're not getting in my nose. But, going outside and sitting under them, that'd be a different story. So I think we can see how we set up these, separations and these boundaries of what we want and what we don't want. And yet, when we say that, awakening or to enlightenment or whatever you want to call it, is just to be so clearly conscious of reality, that we just see things as they are. And then we're no longer fooled by the illusions, excuse me, by the illusions that life throws up. So very quickly after my reaction today, I very quickly saw what I was doing and dropped it, but thought it was a really interesting example in my life. And made me wonder, when do I do this with other things? If there's a person who, has in the past harmed me or I've had a conflict with or something, I probably avoid that person one way or another. Or if there's something that causes me pain, I know when I was much, much younger, I really had difficulty with separation. So, like saying goodbye, leaving, things like that. So, what I did was I just left before the moment came to say goodbye, or when it was the time to say goodbye, I just vanished. Which was a total illusion because I was still separating, I was still leaving, but I just wasn't acknowledging it. I was turning myself away from it. Which was causing harm. Other people wondered, well, wait, where'd she go? I didn't get to say goodbye to her, or making people feel like I didn't care about them because I just left without saying anything. Of course, at the time I wasn't aware of any of this, but when I then started becoming aware, I felt the pain that I was causing myself and others and realized the root of it was my own hanging on to not wanting to separate, which was, an attachment to separation, actually, an attachment to difference, to duality. When we see things as they are, there is no separation. So it's not a problem to say goodbye. There's no separation. And so when we say see things as they are, it's like the, we sometimes say that a menu, say, or a recipe is ideas, descriptions, concepts, and systems, things like that. So, in order to really taste the food, you have to eat it. And once you've eaten it or pre prepared it and eaten it, there's no doubt about what it is. You know it. You've eaten it. You are eating it. If we just stay with the menus and the recipes and what we read in the books, we don't really know what it is. And that's how we experience the world as truly as it is when we let go of all those ideas and systems and descriptions and doctrines and orders. That's how we see things as they truly are. And then there's no longer any question. There's no more any illusion about what that food was you just ate. You maybe couldn't define all, identify all the spices, or you may have thought, that needed more salt, or you may think, I didn't really like it, or whatever. But that's coming from a direct experience of the food. Whereas if you're reading it in a book, looking at a menu, or reading a recipe, there's a degree of separation. You have no direct experience of that food. I saw a quote recently from someone who I don't know who this person is, but it said, answering the question, what is Zen, is like answering, what is the ocean? We can give all kinds of descriptions of it. We can show pictures of it. We can tell the history of it. We can, study the contents of it. Become scholarly about it. But to understand the ocean, you have to submerge yourself. You have to get wet. And it's the same with Zen. It's the same with life, things as they are. To experience them, you have to get wet. You have to plunge into it. And our ideas and our concepts and our aversions, my aversion because I'm not. Because of my allergic reaction, separates us, keeps us from it. Now, it doesn't mean that because I have this allergic reaction in the garden, I'm just going to go sit out there all day long. No. But I don't have to have that desire to eliminate the garden, right? Or to skip spring, or whatever else, Seeing things as they are, experiencing things directly as they are, includes the allergies, includes the symptoms, and includes the blossoms, and includes then the flowers falling. Because also outside my door, we have a beautiful camellia. How do you say that in English? I don't know, but I don't know how you say it in Portuguese either, but it's a beautiful, tree and has these amazing, bright, these blossoms, kind of the color of my sweater. And they've been blossoming for a few weeks, but they fall and then a new one will arise. And so around on the ground around them, it's littered with the fallen blossoms. Now, if I'm attached to them and I want them to stay forever in the tree, I won't truly be appreciating them. If I want to keep them as they are, well, then I will suffer because I won't have it. They will not stay. Everything changes. They will fall. So I can even appreciate the blossoms that are fallen on the ground. And then maybe when they dry up and we sweep them away, I can appreciate that. Because, the ones that we don't want, the weeds, they're going to come back in full force, whether we like them or not. And usually we don't like them. And Adria knows all about that. But also, like having a direct experience of the weeds. They just are what they are. And that takes into account what they mean for the other plants and what we need to do if we want to foster the growth of the other plants. We may have to remove the weeds, but it doesn't mean that we don't see them for what they are. And we're not, it doesn't mean we're attached to an idea about them. We see things as they are. We see them fully. I think I said this a couple of weeks ago or something, that to see things clearly with equanimity means to see harm and well-being, or see something harmful and something beneficial equally. That doesn't mean that something harmful is that we will then do harmful things because it's beneficial. It doesn't mean they're the same. They're equal, and we see them clearly. We see harmful things as harmful, and we see beneficial things as beneficial. That's what it means to see the world clearly, to see things as they are. And if we get caught up with this excess of thinking that Alan Watts talks about, then we lose touch with things as they are and what we can call the real world. So what's the solution? Well, the solution is, I think Alan Watts said something like, be silent in your mind. That which just means don't be chattering, don't let all of that in your mind be the noise of the world. It's just something else that's happening. And if we can silence our what we add to that, and take a step back and look at things as they really are, see what's behind the aversion. So in my case, it's very clear behind the aversion is I don't want to feel, have these allergic reactions. So then I'm going to behave in a way that is not nice. But if I can see what's behind the aversion, then I can see, oh yeah, okay, it's just that I don't want to feel this. But I am feeling it. This is the reality. Okay, it's okay. Then I can just appreciate the garden for what it is. It's more difficult, obviously, when we're in situations where real listening, heart listening, is more challenging because the speech that is being offered is not heart speech. It's not speech coming from the heart. In the circle that we have, it's much easier because everyone has the same intention to speak from the heart and listen from the heart. But, Donald Trump is not speaking from the heart. And all the other chatter, that's just the loudest example, but all the other chatter that's going on, positions, beliefs, doctrines, all of that, it's not coming from the heart. So it's harder to listen from the heart. And yet, it doesn't have to be. We can still listen from the heart and listen to, become silent in our mind so that we can hear what's behind all that chatter, what's behind all that discursive discourse, all of the unhealthy stuff that is being said and done. If we silent our minds, then we can, and that's what we do when we sit, is that's our practice. Then we can hear differently. We can see differently. And the, you know, the, let's say the, when we do that, we're not seeking to silence the other person. Like, the big dream, the big picture, an example is Gandhi, who he had no intention of defeating the British Empire. That was not his purpose. That was not what he was seeking. He was seeking, how could we say this? I'm sure people have said it better, but he was seeking freedom for his people, all the peoples in India, and that at the time it still included Pakistan, that hadn't broken off yet, right? And Bangladesh, and for all of these peoples, this multicultural society that of India, he was seeking a place of peace and well-being together. And that they would have their own self-determination or something like that. The result was, and he approached this from, deep listening, peaceful discourse, nonviolence, and he approached it from a position of a silenced mind, let's say. The result was not exactly what he planned, the British Empire was defeated, in a sense. It was the beginning of the end of the British Empire. At least they lost their Indian part of the empire. But it also resulted in the various factions of India breaking off. It also resulted in Gandhi's being killed, assassinated. He wasn't assassinated because he tried to bring down the British Empire. He was assassinated because he was trying to bring peace and wholeness to his people, which was unacceptable to some parts of that society. So, we can have the big picture, and in a sense, his big picture did succeed because India is an independent nation, and Pakistan is an independent nation, and Bangladesh is an individual. They're independent, self-determining. Doesn't mean that it's peaceful necessarily, but. And maybe doesn't mean that, everyone's well-being is taken care of, but that aspect of it, of not living under the oppression of a foreign power, was achieved through peaceful action and discourse, resulted in his death. He didn't envision that, but that wasn't his goal, was to live forever, And in the same way, when we look at things that are troubling us today, the big dream or the end game is not to get rid of Trump. That was a mistake that was made 4 years ago, to a certain extent. The end game is not to, I don't know, I'm sure you all have in your countries various situations that you could see the short term game, and that wouldn't be what the point is, If we look from our practice point of view, we have an end game much like Gandhi's. The awakening of all beings. Peace, well-being for all. Like John Lennon said, you may say I'm a dreamer. Well, okay. We can dream. When we see into the absolute true reality of things as they truly are, it's so obvious. It's so clear that that is what the natural order of things is. But when we get, when we're not listening and we get caught up in all of the chatter around fixed positions and ideas and concepts and doctrines, and grasping, the three poisons, the greed, anger, and ignorance, then, and we don't silence our minds, then we lose sight of it. And we can see our culture does that, our society does that generally. And it's not, this is nothing new, It's like we say, this is not new under the sun. It's not 21st century original. This is like in the Buddha's day, the same thing was happening. Different forms, different manifestations, but the same thing. So, Can we see that our practice is about stepping back and looking at what's truly here now? Of course, the ultimate question is, who am I? And if we really look into that, then there's no more issue. Of course, there's a lot of issues, but we see clearly things as they are. So you have to get wet, as I said, to understand the ocean, you have to submerge yourself to know the ocean. And that's one that has, special meaning for me, because I didn't see the ocean until I was 15, and it was a mind-blowing experience, a heart-opening experience. The rest of you, it's really hard for you to imagine having not seen the ocean until you were 15, especially in Portugal. But I lived in the middle of the United States and just didn't see the ocean. But it's not too late. I know the ocean now. I got wet. So I'll stop there and hear if you want to share anything. Questions, comments? I tell you.
Evening, everyone. Sorry, it's completely unrelated, but I see a James Joyce book on your shelf behind you. What is this book you're always referring to?
Oh, I'm not sure. I have a lot of Joyce books
The
back
one
home.
that happens one during one day or
Ulysses.
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 Thank you. Just
Yeah. Yeah.
I have
Ulysses.
to make myself a reading list, apparently. Thank you.
Lisa.
Hello. I wasn't supposed to be here tonight. I had a date with girlfriends that had been set tonight, and here I am. It's interesting what you talked about aversion and not going into the garden, and because just as we were, so I still saw my friends, but made it earlier, and as we were leaving, one of our friends, my friends, there was a, this the moon is almost full tonight, not yet, but almost, and it's quite big. And one of the friends said, "Oh, I can't look at it," because I guess she has insomnias when the moon is full. And so I can't look at it because I'm gonna, I have insomnias. I can't look. And it's exactly what you were saying about not going into the garden because of the allergies. And because of the effect of the moon, she couldn't even look at it, as if looking at it would make her not be able to sleep. Anyway, so it was made me think of that, and wanted to share that. Thank you.
Yeah, you see how common it is. Probably 100 times a day we do things like this, maybe, without even realizing it. I don't know.
I'm almost out of battery, so now I cannot say what I was going to say because I have to act on this battery thing. Sorry, maybe later.
So I will add on. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, John.
I was just saying that, yeah, of course, there's some wisdom in not subjecting ourselves to what may harm us, right? So, but it's a bit difficult to have that equanimity vision of, yes, it's a bit, I'm allergic to it, but I'm gonna expose myself to it, and it's a bit of yeah, but I guess if you have a clear vision of reality, it's easier.
Well, I think, so just to take this case with me, it's not that I'm going to go sit in the garden, but I'm not going to reject the garden. Because initially that was I'm not even going to look at the garden because I was, angry at the garden for making me feel bad. So I'm not going to subject myself to sit out there in the, be covered with pollen. But I am not going to reject it. It's beautiful. The flowers are beautiful. And spring is wonderful. I avoid having to, be in a situation where it will really be strong. Because you're right, there's no reason to subject oneself to become a martyr or something. Because then I wouldn't be appreciating my allergy. Then I wouldn't be seeing it for what it is.
Yeah, that reminds me of that quote by, I think it's Dogen, right? Zen is remembering and then forgetting myself and then remembering, something like that. And so we have a certain wisdom to do something and to avoid some other things, but then we kind of need to forget our own wisdom about what's good or bad for us and. Or at least give it some leeway to not fully trust our strong sense of what's right and wrong, I guess.
Well, yeah, it also depends on what we are basing our sense of right and wrong on. If we have a holistic experience of things as they are, then it's clear, it's clear that when harm is being done, and that when we say we have these precepts of I vow to refrain from killing, we don't even really need to have that precept because we know that I and the other are not separate and we don't want to kill. And that extends to insects and animals and thoughts and emotions. By having an attachment of who we think we are, we're killing who we truly are. Or if I'm, have this attachment to my allergy of like, okay, I don't need to pay any attention to it. I can go out there in the garden. Then I'm actually killing what is best for me. I'm not honoring what is beneficial or something like that. Adrien or Lisa, did you want to say something now that you're back? No? Okay.
Yeah, I suppose I can. The thing I'm thinking about is that, I mean, I can find in my experience moments where or when it's not really aversion, but sometimes I'm afraid of engaging. Or of, yeah. So then maybe from there it then becomes aversion or rejection or something. But the sort of I feel that the initial sometimes, or I don't know. I had an example. I have several examples, but one right now. I mean, today was a discussion I was having about my relationship with my sister. And yeah, I can see how, in our relationship or in moments of conversation, she starts in a speaking in a certain way or about something in particular, etc. And from that moment, I'm sort of triggered. So I know that she's it's a mix between like she's trying to it's becoming intimate, actually. She's just sharing how she feels. But I sort of resent it somehow. And I'm afraid to get too close to it because it's kind of like too tense, too intense, too. Yeah, so I just yeah, then it goes into something like aversion. I sort of reject. I mean, I resent it, and so I. Yeah, it's similar to what you're saying with the pollen. Then I, luckily, I have a wise partner who told me that maybe I can just be with that, just stay with that, with the moment when it's happening, when I'm having the reaction somehow, instead of straight away skipping to the aversion part and to pushing it away and shutting down or something. I can just be with that and it'll might be all right. So I guess I'll give that a go if I can remember to do that.
Yeah, wise partner indeed. And what you just said, if I can remember to do that, because sometimes we're so caught by it. And that is so already this is a step because often behind aversion and anger or rejection, there's fear. That's how fear kind of protects, puts up this protection. So that's already important to be able to see that. Often we don't, we're just angry or ugh, and we don't see that behind there's fear. So yeah, that's and it's important to see that and stay with that, yeah. And also what you say is, when things get intimate, when it becomes closer, then it becomes more fearful or fearsome, we are afraid then. It's frightening to be close, to be intimate. Until we are, and then it's not frightening anymore. We see it's just an idea, this fear. I mean, what scares us is an idea, let's say something like that. Yes.
So there's another level of this. Maybe I'm sure it has been mentioned somehow, but so I have addiction issues, don't we all, I guess. So in that in where as far as that's concerned, it's like different than the pollen thing when the pollen is like you didn't really ask for anything and you can't be in the presence of something. But when you're moving away from addiction, you have to stay away at the beginning as well, or whatever. You have to decide very sort of firmly to stay away from whatever substance, people, certain people, it depends. So that sort of creates another dynamic somehow. I mean, maybe, I mean, fundamentally, maybe not, but I'm just so curious because it feels, I just feel this sometimes that I had this with a person actually that I feel drawn, and I know as I'm letting myself be drawn. So that's the weird thing because it relates to what we were saying just before. So maybe the fact of being drawn is not this intimacy, or but I know it's not gonna bring anything, or it's risky. Or, yeah, there's a sense of danger. And so, sometimes when you're sticking to your plan of withdrawing, I suppose, from substance, person, or whatever, then you say, okay, I can feel this, so I'm not going. I'm gonna reject. I'm not gonna reject, but I'm gonna stay away, or I'm gonna and sometimes, I don't know, I've had this, for example, amongst other things, with whatever, with booze, with alcohol. So at the beginning, I was staying away completely. And then after a while, I allowed myself to be in the presence of people who are drinking, etc. And now I've actually allowed myself to drink once in a while again. So it's just interesting. I'm not, yeah. Any thoughts on the subject?
Yeah, I mean, I'm certainly not an addictologue or, an expert on addiction, but just from our practice, position or experience, it's what you're describing is not different, really. It seems different because, like you say, you choose to stay away from something, whereas I mean, I'm choosing to stay away from something too because of my allergy. So in a sense, you choosing to stay away too. Or, at some point then you're choosing to say, maybe I will stay away from my absolutely draconian separation that I'm making. Staying away, I mean, just in a sense of, I will not hang on, I will not be attached to that. If you feel that it's appropriate, and maybe at another point you will feel, oh no, that's not appropriate, whatever it is. The whole, it all revolves around being attached and hanging on to some idea or concept. Not that addiction is necessarily an idea or a concept, but so like me, in my case, I have this hypersensitivity to a harmless substance. For some people, substances that for you are dangerous aren't dangerous. I mean, they are dangerous health-wise for other people, but not in the same way it is for you. So you have to just react what's appropriate for you with this hypersensitivity. I don't know if you could call it hypersensitivity, but I'm staying with the allergy metaphor. In a sense, you're allergic to whatever the substance is that poses you problem. So then you respond to that. Yep.
Thank you. But so how does that apply? I'm just trying to wrap my head around this. How does that apply, for example, to this fact like social media or something, or sugar or tobacco? It's like the thing is constructed to bypass your, yes, you have discomfort, you're burning your mouth with the cigarette, you're stuffing yourself with sugar, you're losing hours of sleep because you're swiping on your social network. So you are harming yourself, but at the same time, your pleasure centers, et cetera, are triggered. Or basically it's all to do with dopamine, actually. So that in that space, in your case with the pollen, it's just that's the distinction I'm trying to understand with the pollen. I mean, yeah, I suppose it applies as well, actually, because You're enjoying being outside in the sun in the garden, etc. You're a pleasure, so your dopamine is kicking in, but you're also triggered.
Right. And in the same way, so the first time I ever did any kind of, practice like this, which actually was the thing that changed my life because I had a really powerful experience of things as they are. After that weekend, and this was like 32 years ago, I stopped drinking coffee. I stopped having even the occasional cigarette that I had sometimes. For a long time, I stopped sugar. I stopped eating meat. Not to do with anything that like happened in that retreat, apart from this experience of like suddenly seeing things as they are. And then all of that was like not of any interest anymore. I didn't have a hard time. I know I've heard people say with coffee they have a terrible time and they have headaches. It so happened that during the retreat, the 3 days, there was no coffee. So that I did experience, a headache of not having coffee. But the what, having seen things as they are was so powerful and so clear that I don't no longer wanted to do that. Now, I don't know, if I had a heroin addiction, I don't know how that would have worked, I don't know if I would have stopped using heroin just like that. Because, some addictions are different, are, chemical stuff happening and, there's stuff going on. But even with the, this, yeah, this is terrible. I mean, I'm like everybody else, I'm like constantly have this. But I have the clarity of mind to, the silence of mind to be aware of it and then to more easily put it down or separate from it. It just comes from silencing the mind, seeing things as they are. There's this really good book about addiction that actually Carl, who João knows, and some of you others might have met in a retreat. He came to one of our retreats in Coimbra. And he's a psychiatrist and an addiction specialist. He's American, but he lives in Lisbon. And he wrote this book called The Urge, where he traces the history of addiction, like Cleopatra, addicted to whatever. I don't know what she was addicted to, but and his own, he tells his own story. I mean, he was like super, super addicted. And he tells his story and wraps it in with the story of, the history of addiction. And it's very enlightening. And he's a Zen practitioner. So if anybody's interested in addiction stories, did you read it, Joan? Or no? No, you did not. Okay. I didn't know about it until we were in that retreat and he told us about it. So I immediately got it and
I've had some conversations with him about it, about the subject, yeah, but I haven't read the book.
he actually moved to Portugal because he was interested in Portugal decriminalized drugs. I don't know if everything, if heroin too, I don't know, but it's like the world's leader in this policy. And he was really interested to see how it worked. And so he actually moved with his wife and his child to Portugal to practice. He's a psychiatrist in Portugal. I don't know, because I've heard things that it's not working like they thought it would, the Portuguese government, but I don't know. Well, we are out of time. Thank you. Wonderful sharing with you. One of these nights we'll do a circle, I promise.